Okay, Peter, we're on. So, you are Dr. Peter Choate.
Yes.
And you've come from Calgary in Canada.
I have.
To share with this community about child protection.
I was invited by the child protection team here, who are, I think, in their formative stages, to come and talk about what is child protection and how does one address some of the issues around child protection. So what I've been doing is sort of in general talking about sort of the moral imperative of looking after children and allowing environments where children are able to develop in a healthy and safe fashion. And how does one shift culture within family or within communities where that moral imperative perhaps is not getting met? Of course, one of the dangers of coming from the West is that those of us in the West think we have the solution for everything, and in reality we have the solution for very little. So part of the objective was to create a conversation amongst the people here about what child protection can look like and what are the issues and what are the ways in which it can be approached, so that as they begin to do their work and evolve, that they're able to do so from something that makes sense to Oroville and makes sense to the communities around Oroville.
I see. Now, do you find, or would you comment about how different cultures view this? I'm sure it's different according to the culture, and seems that from what I've heard, that certain practices are more acceptable in certain cultures than others, so it's a difficult thing to address.
There are cultural variations, but it's also perhaps important to recognize that the definition of abuse or the definition of what's acceptable are social constructions of the society. So part of the discussion that needs to take place in various cultures is how do we feel about what is going on, as opposed to simply assuming that because it's gone on all along that it needs to continue to go on in that fashion. So what one sees if you look at some of the research from around the world is that many of the things that have constituted traditional parenting or family practices in many cultures are actually not things that children like. And as you create the opportunity for children to talk about that, they're able to start to say that the things that have been maybe normative in our culture or our community are not things that are helping me very much. So part of the process of change is for the opportunity for children and parents to talk about what's been going on in the community. How do they feel about it? Is it achieving what they hope to achieve? And then what would we like to have different and what might that look like? Child protection, as you address issues in culture, is a slow process of change. The big step that's important in culture is for the community to talk about it. Because so often practices continue from generation to generation because nobody's talking about how do we feel about what's going on and would we like something different. The research literature and the popular media in India are talking more about the issues. So, for example, we see in some of the international research journals articles now about changing views of domestic violence in India. We see discussion about child sexual abuse in India, and we see more discussion about physical abuse in India. And we're seeing that not only in the research literature, in the academic world, and the clinical world, but we're also seeing it in publications like the Deccan Chronicle and the Hindu. And so what we're starting to see is that the people of India, both academic as well as community and the media, are beginning to talk about how do we feel about what's been going on. That's important because then it becomes the people within the culture who are talking about the changes and talking about the things that matter to them and will set the priorities, as opposed to people from other parts of the world.
So good, that sounds like people are beginning to come out of denial.
Yes. So, for example, academically, we've seen some research published a few months ago, which I from down in Bangalore, which talks about the rate of childhood sexual abuse in India. The government of India, on one of their websites, has some research on the frequency of that. And then, in the time that I have spent both in this visit here and an earlier visit to Oroville, I've also seen articles in the popular press talking about childhood sexual abuse and some of the problems that have gone on as a result of it. And also some talking about some of the ways in which children are saying, we don't like this. We don't think that it's helping us grow up to be healthy, responsible adults. So that conversation in those forums is an essential part of the recognition in the community. And that's what helps to create the seeds of change. I mean, childhood sexual abuse, childhood abuse occurs in communities throughout the world. There really are no communities exempt from this issue. What really matters is that people are prepared to talk about it so that it doesn't remain a secret.
So, sounds a bit like education has to be, that you have to start with the adults. The children, if they can come out of fear, are ready to say they don't like it. But the adults who accept that this is a practice and perhaps have been done to them as well.
I think you're really talking about, I think you want to approach both the adults and the children. The children often can be a major, major catalyst to change because adults hear the children talk about how it's not working, how they feel, and start to understand that what they're doing as parents is not achieving the results that they would like for their children. And that's how we begin to then get the parents talking about what's going on. It's a slow process. And so I think that what you do is you find the places, the communities, the groups, the parents, the children who are prepared to talk about it, and you let these conversations take place. Because, you know, if you're a child and you're in a classroom and somebody talks about, say, physical abuse, and you discover that, gee, I'm not the only one who doesn't like it, then all of a sudden a door opens for you that I'm not unusual. There are other people who don't like this practice. There are other children in the world around me who don't like this practice. So now I'm able to start to tell my story. Women who are living in abusive environments, if they get to recognize they're not the only ones who are living in those environments and they're not the only ones who don't like it, they get to now start to talk about the story. One of the other things that I think is really interesting, and you've seen in many cultures, is that men can be introduced to the idea that this dominant force that has been so cultural and historical with men in many cultures is not working for them either, because what they're starting to discover and what we can talk about slowly over time is that it's creating distance in your family, distance between you and your wife, distance between you and your children, and men actually don't like it. But it's a brave conversation that follows the conversations of women and children because men are slower to enter into these kinds of conversations. They fear their manhood or they fear their role as father or man will be threatened by these conversations. So it's hard for us males to get into those conversations. But in time, if the children and the women will have these conversations, men can be brought along as well.
I think you said a key word there, fear. The fear is what keeps men, women, and children alike quiet.
Yes, fear of the consequences, fear of shame, fear of guilt, fear that they're going to be judged, fear that somebody's going to see them as spoiled or inadequate or tarnished, fear that if they talk, they're going to be the only one who's experienced this, fear that they'll be shunned by the community. These are natural fears.
And children that I've known that have had this problem feel that there's something wrong with them. That's why it's happened.
Many children will say that they think that the sexual abuse is occurring because there's something wrong with them, that it is their fault. We also recognize that, and it really doesn't matter which culture we're talking about, children who have been sexually abused have often been told by the abuser that if they tell the secret, that something bad is going to happen to them or something bad is going to happen to someone else in the family. And so the child says, gosh, if I tell, my dad will be forced out of the family, or the uncle will no longer be there, or my mother will have to leave. And so there's a lot of power around the sexual abuse that causes the child to believe they have to keep the secret, in addition to feeling that somehow they must be creating this. It must be their fault. Otherwise, why would this be happening?
Horrendous. Do you see, well, as you said, there's the progress is slow. How to say, do you see some light at the end of the tunnel?
Even in the West, where we've been having these conversations, I think perhaps longer. So I've been a social worker for some 36 years. And I'd like to tell you, 36 years later, where I live, that childhood sexual abuse and physical abuse of children and domestic violence does not happen. But I would be wrong. I would be misleading you. But what does happen differently is that there are now more resources available for people who are the victims of these, and there are ways where men or women who are the perpetrators of the violence are able to go and get help. You know, I think what's most promising is that we discover that, with the exception of those individuals who have personality disorders or serious other mental health issues, that the vast majority of people who abuse each other are treatable, and that when we get the right interventions in place, we can stop the abuse in families. Not everybody wants to be treated, and not everybody wants to change. But we can get the tools in place that, for those who are willing to engage the change process, that change can occur. And the vast majority of people who abuse children are capable of change. The vast majority of people who are involved in childhood sexual abuse can change. Yes, there's exceptions. The pedophile is an example. But most people who are able to change, if we can help them to understand why change is necessary and provide them the tools and the resources for the change. And that's, I think, hopeful. But will violence between people go away? I think as we look around the world, whether we're looking at communities, families, nations, we discover that violence between people seems to be something that we haven't figured out as a race how to stop.
Thank you, Peter. In conclusion, would you like to say anything in regard to your time here in Oroville? Any ideas or plans you might have for the future?
Well, both my wife and I cherish our time here. This is our third visit to Oroville, this will not be our last, because actually we very much cherish our time here. We cherish the energy here. We are both privileged to be able to go and concentrate in the inner chamber on several occasions during our time here. And we have been quite privileged to meet a variety of people, both those who come here often and those who live here, who have introduced us, I think, to a spirit of life that is something very unique, and I think the people who live here are lucky to have it. So we enjoy coming here. We leave here having gained a great deal. In fact, in the course I taught this week, I think the students taught me more than I taught them.
Kind of you, Peter.
Thank you
so much.
A pleasure. Thank you very much.